man who's covering the Eastern Conference Finals for The Athletic, who also knows some movers and shakers who say that this offseason could be a wild one in the NBA, and that means a wild one for your Cavs. Joe Vartan joins us from The Athletic. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Joe, how the hell are you?
Oh, who can say? It's day 8 or 9 of this series. I'm talking to you from my hotel room here at the Sheraton in Indianapolis. And, you know, it's just time of year. The beat just kind of goes on.
Joe Vartan joining us right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Do you believe that the Cavaliers, I know they lost to one of these teams. Do they have the talent to beat both these teams in a 7-game series?
Wow. you know, I guess like you go back to game 2 and they should never have lost that game. And there's 15 reasons why. And if just one of those things changes, then that is a 2-2 series and you're not sure. But you just, I mean, like, look, I mean, I heard your intro, you know, I've been following you guys along online while I've been gone, on Twitter and whatnot, or X, whatnot. And the things you guys are talking about are the things that, like, my friends, that I, you know, and I even occasionally write about them saying that I take advice from them as NBA fans. It's the things that we're talking about on our text threads about, like, you watch the Pacers and you watch Aaron Nesmith and you see his ankle touch the floor, which we know that hurts. And, you know, he misses zero time. And then, you know, with the Knicks, I mean, Towns is out there hobbling around and Hart hyperextended his knee. And these guys are going that extra step. Like they're playing through stuff and they're not, it's not an issue for them. And there's just a certain level of, you know, the word gets thrown around all the time when you talk about the Cavs, toughness. You see it. Like I've just been watching it for 8 days now, in this series. And so, yeah, you do make those comparisons. And so when you talk about talent, yes, I do think the Cavs have enough talent to beat either of these teams. I'm on the record being concerned about playing two small guards. But as talented players, like, you know, Donovan and Darius are up there with the best in the league. So yeah, that's there. But whether it's me or you guys or Jason Lloyd or Kobe Altman or even Kenny in sort of the way that he said it, like, we're all sort of saying that there's a toughness issue still with this team. And you could take that word any number of ways, but like, I'm watching it on the floor now to understand what it means between these two teams, and that's where the Cavs need to get.
Joe Vartan with us. As you know, you're covering, you know, that series, which has been a very, very interesting series, just like ours was, even though it looks like it might only go 5 games. You're talking to people around the league about why these teams are excelling at the right time and why the Cavs just didn't. What seems to come up? You mentioned the toughness and the mental stuff, maybe some physical stuff too, but overall, what are you hearing from people? Are they just confused as to how we're left with these two teams right now?
No. And in fact, I mean, you know, all of Cleveland knows now how good the Pacers are. But I think we all, just in the league, because of how good the Cavs, the Thunder, and the Celtics were during the regular season, and then the Lakers trading for Doncic, it was hard to almost pay attention to anybody else. Well, the Pacers were 40-15 to end the season. And this is something they've been building for years, and it's coming to fruition, and you see the genius of it. And we've never talked about the quote-unquote genius of what the Pacers have done. But it started with the trade for Tyrese Haliburton. And then, you know, they stunk when they made the trade. They were in like 13th, I think, in the league when they pulled the trade. His first full year in the league, first full year with the Pacers, I think they were 11th. And so they knew they were bad, and they were putting the ball in his hands at the end of games. So he would have like ample experience closing games out when it matters. And we've seen him obviously play like a superstar for the most part in the clutch situations. So that's the first thing. The second thing they did is they had one star that they traded for. And then almost with precision, they have built around him with players that complement his game perfectly. I have been saying, on some of the national stuff I've been doing in this series, that the Pacers are the best system team in the tournament. They really are a system team. Like, they play a certain way, but the way they're able to do it is how they stack their roster around this one guy. So, like, that's how they've gotten this far. They play 10 guys in the postseason. Almost all of them can run, most of them can shoot, and they all play off of their star. So, like, you get it. Now, how's that going to look in a finals? Like, I certainly don't want to write this team off. I'll just say both they and the Thunder are up 3-1, so we suspect that's the finals. And the Thunder, they play a similar style to the Pacers, but they're deeper. And I think they're better, and they're certainly better defensively. So it's probably a tough matchup for the Pacers. But that's how they've done it. And you can see it, and you can see them being a problem for the next couple years.
Joe Vardon with us right now on the hotline from The Athletic. So there are a lot of rumors floating around about how crazy of an offseason this could be. And we're just a week removed from people saying, well, there's not going to be a lot done because of all the second apron stuff. Where are you landing on this? I think it was Sham saying it could be a wild, wild situation. Brian Windhorst just yesterday saying the minute the season ends, the dominoes could start to fall.
Oh, yeah. Now the wildness, I mean, you know, I assume you guys know this, like, and this has been talked about, but the wildness is not really with free agency. It's insane level stars being traded. And, you know, like there's going to be multiple, you know, champion or like all-star or like shoe deal type players who could be moved. And that will have, you know, impacts throughout the league. The way that affects the Cavs, I mean, you know, I mean, this is not the math in general. I stink at math, but math in general, and then the sort of the ins and outs of the CBA are not necessarily a strong suit for me. But the Cavs, when the new league year begins, they will become a second apron team, which is greatly restrictive as to how you can make roster moves. So when we talk about the big moves come in and how does that affect the Cavs? Well, like, they won't be able to pair two players to go get the one player. So if someone says, oh yeah, the Cavs are a dark horse for Giannis. Well, I mean, I've been doing this 11 years. I don't know how that's possible because they don't have any one singular player who makes as much money as he does. So I don't get that one, but yeah, I mean, if there is a deal to be made, that works legally within the CBA that would make the Cavs different enough to avoid what has happened to them the last 3 years, I think they have to consider it. But I do think, you know, what Kobe said at his press conference, which I wasn't there for because it was my travel day to get to this series. But of course, I know what he said. And he was talking about like how good they feel about what they've built and they need to take another step and all that. I do think a lot of that is right. And I do think that building things takes time. And just because they have had this hurdle with toughness in the playoffs doesn't mean that they can't get past that. I just want to stress again. The thing that bothers me the most is a 6'1 guard who's really not 6'1 next to a 6'3 guard who's really not 6'3. There's only three teams in NBA history who have won like that. And so when I think about the Cavs and all that they've done right over the last 3 years, I'm concerned about that part. So is there a trade to be made to fix that? Maybe, but maybe they don't want to, and maybe they can't because of the collective bargaining agreement.
Joe Vardon joining us on the show. So of all these things, like, your fans are very quick to move Jared Allen.
Yeah.
Then they're quick to move Darius Garland. Are teams quick to go out and get those guys? Because, I mean, we had Brian Geltzeiler yesterday. He goes, I think a lot of teams would love to bring in Darius Garland. And I'm going, well, yeah, but for their wings, I don't know. So what do you think the teams would want? Like, I know that Evan Mobley, under a lot of circumstances, is untouchable. Is there actually anything realistic that they could go out and get? Like, okay, fans might be questioning a little bit, but they would 100% make these deals.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a big general broad thing. Like, would there be a possibility that Giannis would be available for Evan with the right third team involved or whatever they would have to do? Would that be something that's serious? Because I think some people really love Evan Mobley. That's great. But, you know, you got Giannis, who basically is what everybody wants Evan Mobley to become, and he'd be available right now. And I still think the window, Joe, and maybe I'm wrong, that's why we have you here, I still think the window is the same. I think it's a 2-year window with or without Evan Mobley and with or without Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, you know, I was just talking about all the things that are impossible, you know, the escalator in Evan's contract, because he was Defensive Player of the Year and an All-NBA player, raises his salary significantly. Now, I'm still not sure if it gets him to what Giannis makes. If it doesn't, then we have to stop talking about it. But if it does, then it's almost like you have an Indians/Guardians thing when we were all kids, when they could have traded Jarrett Wright for Pedro Martinez and didn't do it. You would have to think about that one, I think, if you're the Cavs. But Evan, you know, Evan showed the growth in the regular season finally that you were looking for from him. And he has to be better still. Can he become the player that Giannis is? That's the question that they have to ask themselves. But, like, anything short of a Giannis, like, you don't move Evan because you know that he's your ticket, but he is your ticket. Like, if the Cavs are going to win the NBA Finals, their best player has to be somebody like Evan, somebody who is between 6'8 and 7 feet tall, somebody who is a two-way, who can dominate on offense and also do the things that Evan already does defensively. So Evan's partially there, but he's not all the way there. And until that happens, you know, that's the step the Cavs need to take.
All right, Joe, immediately saw last night when the Pacers won that game and they're on the brink of going to the championship, to the finals. Yeah. People already started to talk about how bad the ratings are going to be. You're somebody that covers the NBA, so I imagine you don't really care because everybody in your orbit's going to be watching these games anyway. But should we care? Should the NBA care? Because on one hand, you could say, hey, you have small markets that have a chance to get to the finals. One of the big criticisms for the NBA forever is that all the good players want to go to the big markets, therefore freezing mid to small markets out. And also, this is the NFL model, right? That anybody can go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, when was the last time that we would have had a finals quite like this? Was it Cavs, Spurs? I mean, do we go back that far? Where it's just like neither team, you know, is a massive market. I mean, Miami, when they played the Thunder, you know, Miami is not as big of a market as we think it is, but that team had LeBron, Dwayne, and Bosch, so it sort of transcended that anyway. It's not a bad thing for the league. The league already has its $77 billion just getting started, can't get out of that contract. So the league shouldn't care and probably doesn't. And actually, the league can use this as an opportunity. If you get a competitive game one, a compelling game one, whether people are watching or not, I wonder if they watch game two. Because the NBA, I think probably more so than any other professional sports league, really leans on the other ways to reach fans besides the linear TV and streaming. Like, they really lean into the highlights packages, to the gossip, to whatever goes on social media and all those things. And so I think a really good game one helps the league. And the reason why I'm saying they should lean into this is, as you said, Anthony, like, you would hope that they're trying to elevate that next star. And you have Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who just won an MVP. Can he become a household name? Like, people who don't watch the Thunder, can they see just how crazy good this guy is? And then with Tyrese, it's the same. I mean, you know, he plays in a small market with Indiana. It's a team that doesn't get a lot of a run nationally, and he's really good. And so if you're really trying to move on from the LeBron, Steph, Durant era, which we really are, you know, we're there now, this is how you do it. By you put two teams that maybe people don't know so well with players who deserve the attention on the biggest stage. See what happens.
The great Joe Vardon on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Joe, thank you very much for the time. All the best to you.
Same to you guys. See you soon.
Joe Vardon on that North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.